Sexy Grandpa.
Right.
Yeah.
Sexy Grandpa.
I remember Sexy Grandpa.
Peak Wealth Management proudly presents Finding True Wealth with Nick Hopwood, where we believe by providing education and guidance, we help our clients make sound financial decisions, which ultimately puts them on a path towards their definition of true wealth. Now, here is your certified financial planner professional and founder of Peak Wealth Management, Nick Hopwood.
Welcome. Welcome, everyone, to episode 48 of Finding True Wealth. Today, we're going to be speaking with Brian Cook, who's the founder and editor of mgoblog.com. I've asked Brian to come on the show today for two reasons. One is that we know that there are a lot of mgoblog readers who have a lot of questions for Brian about the blog itself and in the history and how it got started and such. And secondly, I think it's fascinating where you have an engineer who's able to pivot into blogging about football and basketball and be the number one site by far and to serve the largest and best fan base in the world, which of course is Michigan football. I mean, seriously, I'm mad that I didn't come up with this idea. I probably couldn't pull it off, though. And if you're an mGoblog reader listening to Finding True Wealth for the first time, ask yourself if you're on track to reach your financial goals. And as your CFP, your Certified Financial Planner and Financial Coach, my job is to provide education and guidance to see if you're on track or if changes are needed. My goal is that when you walk out the door at my office after the meeting's over, you know that you're on track and you feel great. Or at least you know that there are specific changes that you can make to get back on track. It applies to retirement, taxes, insurance, college planning, debt payoff planning, among other areas. And for investment advice, we work closely with leading third-party institutional strategists, so it's like having 100 CFAs on your team. We have the resources of the largest firms with the attention, with the personal attention of a boutique. We provide the guidance you need to go from good to great. And if you have over $500,000 of investable assets, visit peakwm.com/mgoblog. Book an appointment with me online. You can even take the investment risk quiz and begin your financial planning process on that page as well. So enough from our sponsor. The night before the Ohio State game of 2018, when we were all feeling extremely overconfident, Brian and I sat down and talked about all things MGO, as well as his future vision of MGO blog. I hope you enjoy. Okay, everyone. Welcome to Finding True Wealth. I am your host, Nick Hopwood, founder and president of Peak Wealth Management, and I'm here with a special guest, Brian Cook, founder of MGO blog. Welcome, Brian.
Hello.
So, Brian, I'd like to, you know, get a little background on you and share with all of your MGO blog listeners and the Peak listeners, you know, a little bit about the, you know, the man behind the mask, if you will. Tell us about, you know, your Michigan background as a kid growing up as a Michigan fan.
I was kind of born into it. My family's had tickets since the 1950s, 1958, I think. We have a tailgate banner that's like Cook family since 1958. So I was
Cook family supports you.
Not quite, but we're very forward about how long we've had the season tickets. So,
gotcha.
You know, my uncle always went to games. My father went to games, and I eventually got to go as well. There was like a period when I was very young where I got to go to like the MAC games when Notre Dame came into town. I got the boot for
yeah.
that. But eventually, I was able to go. And then when I applied to schools, there was really only one choice.
Gotcha. And you went to Michigan undergrad for engineering, is that right?
Yes, I have a computer engineering degree undergrad and then a master's in the same.
Okay. Were you there in 97 through 01?
Yes.
And then degree a few years later?
Yeah. Well, it was the dot-com bust in 01, so a lot of people kind of were like, all right, I'll get the credential and then see what the job market's like in 2 years. So 02, 03, I was getting my master's.
Better time to come out then.
Yeah.
So I was a freshman in 97 as well. Did you live in Bursley?
No, I was a South Quad guy. I started in LSNA and then I transferred to engineering after 2 years.
That was a crazy move.
I thought I was going to be a chemistry major, and then I discovered that chemistry was just sitting in labs for 12 hours and discovering that because you screwed up your experiment, you have to stay there for another 12 hours. So I was like, nah, this isn't for me.
But how long would it take you to program with the C++? You know, that's got to be worse than chemistry, right?
No, because if you screw up really badly in programming and you hit compile, it gives you an error immediately.
Okay.
And then so that's like there were some late nights. Don't get me wrong, but it just fit better with my personality, I think.
So you were in South Quad, living near your classes. I was in LSA as well, but I lived in Bursley.
You lived in Bursley.
Yeah, so I had to take the bus.
Good omelets, though, I think. Is that? I don't remember
maybe.
That.
The one thing I remember about the cafeteria was that we had this guy, this like retired guy. Who,
sexy grandpa.
Right.
Yeah.
Sexy grandpa.
I remember sexy grandpa.
So you'd dip in for lunch every once in
a
while.
No, there were just shirts that people had that were like sexy grandpa shirts.
And I don't remember the shirts, but.
I knew a lot of engineers, okay. So I knew a lot of people in Bursley.
Yeah, sexy grandpa made some good grilled cheese, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So I suffered on the bus, but there's
I was
no
on the bus
reason
too because I was going North Campus.
Exactly,
so on the going the other way.
So you did your engineering, master's in engineering,
yeah.
And then you went to go work, I presume, as
yes.
an engineer.
Yes, right. I worked at Soar Technology, which is a small like kind of AI company in town, and then I got laid off. They're like a DARPA contractor, and they lost a contract, so I was kind of like. Last in, last first out, and then I worked at Autodesk, which is a CAD software company for.
They're big.
They're fairly big, yeah. They're kind of they're a medium sized company. Mm-hmm. They're a company that's large enough that if you start a blog and stop doing most of your work, it takes them about 18 months to fire you.
And here we are to the transition. Okay, when did you start MGoal Blog, and what was it that you know gave you the concept, the idea? I mean, a lot of people never heard of what a weblog was at that time, right?
Yeah. So I was a computer engineer, so I was kind of an early adopter of the forum because it kind of came up with a lot of kind of nerdy guys on the internet. And at the time I started, it was 2004, Michigan was about to play Texas in the Rose Bowl. I didn't really have a concept for it. If you look at like the really early posts, it's just some links and it's just someone trying to find their way. Mm-hmm. And at the time there were like three college football blogs. There was Heisman Pundit and then Every Day Should Be Saturday. And then myself, and then like obviously there was this kind of flourishing a couple years later, but yeah, I was in pretty much immediately, and I was frustrated with kind of the shallowness of the way Michigan was covered, largely because I was reading Paul Zimmerman write about the NFL. So Zimmerman would chart all the games and have these opinions that he backed up with a bunch of data and impressions that he really put the work in. And I didn't feel there was anyone really approaching Michigan football from that direction.
Yeah, I feel like if you wanted the Michigan take, you're going to ESPN.com and clicking on Michigan, and there's nothing there.
Or you're going to like
a
Drew Sharp column
yeah.
that's 600 words and just trying to troll you, and it just kind of felt like there wasn't anyone really trying to say what happened in this game. Like, why did Michigan win this game? Why did they lose it? So that's what I wanted to do, and that's what the UFR kind of came from, where I was just a random guy on the internet. So how do I get people to actually pay attention to me? Well, I showed my work, so like you know that it's there.
You showed that you're a good writer, right? And
yeah.
You can write with humor, right? And
that's part of it too, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's kind of three things that I think the blog does. One is it goes into more detail than anywhere else. Two, it's better written than a lot of just kind of newspaper columns where they have this stentorian voice and the other thing is it's from within the fan base.
Yeah.
So I write about us. And newspaper columns at the time were usually writing about you, and often in a very condescending fashion.
But you also always referred to Michigan as Michigan, not we or us.
Well, I wanted to keep some sort of distance, I guess. Like, I've never been in the press box. I don't want to be in the press box. I don't want to interview players. I want to have enough of a distance so I can be as objective as it is possible to be. And sometimes that kind of requires a distance.
I've never heard you talk about that. So this is why we're here. This is why
sure,
we're doing
yeah.
this.
Yeah. yeah.
So in the early days, you were just making posts, right?
Yes.
And then did you figure out, hey, this can generate revenue and income and replace my work or, you know, my day job?
Well, at the time, I was making a couple grand a year because this was a point in time when Google was fairly easy to game, so people would pay you money to put up links on your site, and that was a little bit of a stream of revenue. And then, you know, I started getting some AdSense money in, and it was kind of a trickle, but I could see that the traffic kept going up by multiples every year, so it would go from 500 hits a day to 1,000 to 2,000, and if it kept on that path, then in a couple of years, it'd be a pretty viable business. And at the time, I got fired from Autodesk, And I was like,
because they were following MGoal blog?
Well, I mean, it's, I was not a very motivated employee. I was not a challenged employee. I was, and I didn't work well in the environment that they were providing me. Mm-hmm. And that's not their fault. You know, a lot of people were able to do it. I was not. And then, you know, it's April, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to go get another engineering job. I have this thing that could maybe turn into something. And at that point, I got lucky because this was, there was like the year to 4 years where blogs were hot, and like people high up in large organizations heard of them and decided that they wanted them. So AOL, blast from the past, started up FanHouse, and they reached out to me to be one of their college football leads. And, you know, they're paying like $10 a post and some supplemental thing per month, which was enough for me to break even in a crappy apartment.
$10 a post.
Well, and it was like $500 a month and $10 a post, and then plus whatever I had from the blog. And I was an engineer, so I'd made pretty good money for the past 3 years. I didn't have any educational debt because my mom and my dad were able to pay for my college, and that was huge.
Nice.
So I was able to like look at this and be like, all right, I can give this a shot, and we'll see what happens in 2 years. And by the time 2 years was up, I knew it was kind of like this was the direction.
So this is like 07-ish?
When exactly was it? I think it was a little bit, yeah, I think it was around then, yeah.
That's probably when I started reading. So at that time, you're giving it, your 100% of your time is MGoal blog.
Yeah.
And are you married, kids?
No, no marriage, okay. No kids.
So you're still kind of living on a skeleton budget to make it work?
Yeah, and okay. Like, you know, the first year I think I made $18,000. And then as the blog kind of grew, like that became less restrictive. I was able to bring in Tim from, well, they had their own blog, and that's when we started the podcast. It was entirely Tim and Paul's idea to start the podcast that has become a kind of a big deal.
It was not very consistent though, right? It was like here and there, right?
I mean, we did it during football season. We didn't do it during basketball season. And then Tim took a job at Rivals, and that's when I hired Ace. And that was
that Tom VH?
Oh, Tom was kind of like on a parallel path. So
okay.
Tom was like a recruiting guy, and then ESPN hired him away and tried to replace him a couple times. But, you know, we're a small team, and like it's really about the person and not the position. So, like, I wanted a recruiting guy, but there wasn't really a recruiting guy out there that I felt comfortable with bringing in for the site after Tom was gone.
So as far as the business model now, you do have press passes, but you're saying that it's not you that
yeah, it's not
goes
me.
Up
it's,
in the box,
it
right?
was Ace until he had to retire, and now it's Adam and Ethan Sears.
How do you go from being a blog, right, like on the outside looking in, to now we're credentialed press pass with respect?
Well, it's funny because the Ann Arbor News went under and went to an online model.
Yeah.
And so I was at WTKA. There was, I think it was Bacon's show. John Eubacon had a radio show at the time that he was doing consistently, and they had me on to kind of talk about this stuff. And Richard Deitch, who's currently writing for SI and is kind of a media guy, he was in town doing a Knight Ridder fellowship, and I'm in the room when they go to a break, and I'm like, all right, I'll stick around for the next break, but they're going to call Bruce Mane. Bruce Mane was the SID at the time, and I'm in the room. I'm silent. I'm not on the phone with Mane. And Deitch asks him flat out if they would credential MGoal blog. And he says, yeah, I mean, I guess we would. So that's when I followed up with Tim and Paul. And Tim was actually our first actual credentialed media member. And now we have one photo pass. We have we work with a couple other media corporations to, like, they get a free photographer and they get the pass for us. And we have two guys in the box now, with the occasional third, I mean, on special occasions, I guess.
So what does a typical day look like for you? You have two little kids now, right?
Yes, I have two little
kids. Running the blog.
Yeah, I mean, so right now we have a three-month-old, and my wife is off this semester because she just came in August, which was the worst possible timing. Like, the first one came in January, and that was great.
Yeah.
if you cover college football, I recommend having your kids in January. But it's been tough, especially for my wife, because she's doing 90% of the parenting. But like, you know, once you get to that year point, that year and a half point, the burden becomes lesser. Mm-hmm. And we have grandparents around, so they can help out as well. As far as what a day is, you know, I get up, I start typing, I continue typing. That's it.
I mean, so it's not like the Tim Ferriss 4-hour work week kind of deal.
Well, so my schedule is jam-packed. I probably work 80 hours a week during football season. But then, like, during July, I'm, like, waking up, throwing off an unverified veracity. And don't have, it's like, it's a highly unbalanced work schedule.
Yeah, speaking of that, I mean, how much traffic do you get in the different seasons, right? Fall, winter, and then, I mean, is there any?
There's always a football season spike.
Yeah.
So there's a football season spike, and then if the basketball team is really, really going, you'll get some bonus traffic, and then the summer is always quiet.
But, like, is this weekend going to be like, man?
Yes.
Yeah, cool.
It will be. I mean, we don't really – we have some posts on the weekend, but we're mostly a weekday blog because
– people are reading at their desk.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, if you look at our traffic, it's just a trial on the weekend, and then it's big on the weekdays because people are
– See, I'm the guy who sits on the couch, like, after the kids are in bed on the iPad, kind of like, you know,
right.
Leaning back, you know, swiping through. I imagine there's a lot of people at work.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I think that's probably the case for a lot of content industries where people are taking a break from their work.
So when it comes to, you know, the technical analysis of, you know, the defenses,
yeah.
Like, did you play football in high school?
I played quiz bowl.
Okay, so like I played football and I knew, you know, I was a huge sports guy, right? But like the technical knowledge that you have on the defenses and everything, you know. Like, for me, I don't pay attention to really much
right.
of that stuff. And it's way more than I ever learned as a high school player. So how did you gain credibility with, you know, those X's and O's because you're never a player, never a coach, you know?
Well, I mean, some people would say I don't have it. But if the people who do, I mean, it's because I kind of just did it myself.
You so taught yourself.
Basically, and if you're looking at a play – eventually patterns will emerge. So, you know, if you look at my early UFRs, there'll be run plays. I'm like, that's just a wad of bodies. I can't tell anything. So it's very primitive. And then, you know, as it goes along, it gets a little better, it gets a little better, it gets a little better. And, you know, I've looked at so many plays now that I kind of have a sense for what might be going wrong when something does go wrong because I've seen so many plays like this that do work in a particular way. So often if something goes wrong, I'm like, all right, well, that's probably a missed assignment. How would I make this play work? And there's only so many ways you can arrange 11 different guys on a football field. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's been a process. I think it's an interesting process because I kind of have like this folk knowledge of football. I come at it from kind of an outsider perspective. So it's the conclusions I draw sometimes are different than maybe a football coach might draw. But I think over time, what I've been able to do has kind of panned out as good, reliable information that accurately predicts like which guy is going to be all Big Ten, which guy is going to be drafted in the NFL.
Do you have a favorite diary post of you know, you have such a great community of users and followers and contributors. Is there like one diary post that you'll never forget or like one guy like the knowledge that you love or hate, you know, like if the knowledge shows up, you just got to read it or you're like, oh, my God, I got to delete it immediately.
Well, my favorite consistent thing that gets posted is best and worst. Like, I think Bronx Blue does a absolutely great job with that. And there was a guy named ST3 who used to do a good thing that inside the numbers. Who is the guy who – there was a guy who used to just, like, get stills and, like, draw on them and, like, put up all these plays. I think he was based in Korea or something. But those were great too, because like they were funny. They taught you something about football.
I think I remember those ones.
Yeah. So those three guys, I think, have done a really good job.
What's your vision for the future of the blogging industry and MGO Blog?
Well, I mean, so we've moved to Drupal 8. And we've had some.
What is that?
Drupal is a CMS, a content management system.
Okay.
So
the foundation, the structure
right.
of the
so
site.
6 expired and we needed to move for security reasons and we moved to 8. So now we have a platform we can build off of for a long period of time. But just the way ad blocking is going and the way kind of CPMs are going, it's going to be a point, I think, probably in the somewhat near future where MGoBlog looks at a Patreon thing. So we don't ever want to put content behind a paywall, and I don't think we'll have to. But I think that we're going to start putting together a package where you don't get any network ads. You get a book and a shirt every year. And we're going to try to, like, get people to become subscribers voluntarily. And I think that's going to work because I think the community wants MGoBlog to be able to influence Michigan in a way that doesn't often happen if you're behind a paywall.
What advice do you have for someone who, you know, is engineering taillights at Chrysler, just mailing it in? They hate their life, you know. And they want—they have a passion. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, a blog or
right.
Michigan sports-related or whatever, but they have an idea, and they want to try and see if they can make that work into a career.
Yeah, so I get this question fairly frequently, and the best thing to do is make someone else expect that you're going to do something. So I write, and I've written every day for 15 years because I started a blog and people started reading it. And at that point, well, you got to keep doing it. And that if you find that thing where, like, you can't shirk, you can't be like, oh, I'll do it tomorrow, then you'll actually start getting some momentum to where you want to go.
Well, Brian, I appreciate your time today coming on, you know, talking about small business, you know, kicking the tires, looking under the hood of the blog and sharing, you know, your entrepreneurial experience. Thank you.
Hey, no problem.
You've been listening to the Peak Financial Minute with Nick Hopwood. You can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes and the Android Marketplace or by visiting www.peakwm.com. Peak Wealth Management is your premier wealth management partner. Plan, protect, peak. Securities offered through Regulus Advisors, LLC. Member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Peak Wealth Management, LLC, a State of Michigan registered investment advisor. Peak Wealth Management, LLC is independent of Regulus Advisors.